Three.
Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Monterey Bay Air Resource District Board of Directors meeting. And today is Wednesday, April 15th. The time is 1:32, excuse me. This meeting is being held teleconference and remotely in here in the conference rooms at the location here. So with that, I am going to I'll call this meeting to order. And for the record, the chair is unable to be here, so I will be in his stead. I will be doing the meeting. So with that, I'll ask Siri to the time is sorry, the time is 1:32. And I would love to ask Director Kosmicki if he would lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Director. And with that, Siri, roll call, please.
All right. Director Alley, thank you. Director Eskew.
Present.
Vice Chair Carbone.
Present.
Director Deserpa. Chair Hernandez. Director Jensen. Director Kosmicki.
Here.
Director Labar.
Present at notice location. No public members are in the room.
Thank you. Director Lopez. Director Montesino.
Here.
Director Sandoval.
Here.
Madam Vice Chair, you have quorum today.
With that, we'll move on to the first item, which is item four. It's a presentation of and recognition of outgoing chair of the Board of Directors, Colin Kosmicki, with San Benito County Board of Supervisors.
All right.
Make you walk a little further. As tradition maintains, we are here to present you our gratitude for being our chair for the last year.
Thank you.
I hope you like coffee, but if not,
can't go wrong. Thank you so much. Yes, yeah, really
freaking good health.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll just
sure. Good. Yeah, especially I got an audience here now. First off, if anyone deserves this, it's me. I did an excellent job. I'm kidding. Just the job here is to run the meetings well and keep them going smoothly. And we got a great staff, wonderful people here. And just proud to be part of this agency. And thanks again. Appreciate everybody.
And then we also have another recognition of retirement. And Richard will introduce Teresa.
Good afternoon, members of the board. It's my honor and privilege to recognize one of our outstanding employees as they embark on their retirement. Sort of bittersweet. I think it's really sad for the agency, but it's really great for Teresa, and I vicariously will enjoy her retirement. So without further ado, I'd like to have her up, and we'll present her with the Certificate of Appreciation. Thank you, Teresa. And it says, this Certificate of Appreciation is hereby awarded to Teresa Sewell in recognition of her 34 years of service with the Monterey Bay Air Resources District. And the board expresses the sincere thanks on behalf of districts and community for your contributions in support of district's mission to protect public health and the environment. And Teresa has been an outstanding employee here. Her terminal job was supervisor of all the inspectors, and she did an outstanding job. She's going to be greatly missed, but like I said, as she embarks on a new career of retirement, we want to give her this, which is no surprise for the board as well. This is the obligatory cutting board now. I will just want to point out it says the 34 years, but we tried to customize it by getting high heels and a hard hat. So you can either hang it on your wall or cut, you know, stakes or something on the other side. So, just leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll just make a few comments, but took my boyfriend with me on purpose so he can carry this board. I started my journey in air pollution at the San Joaquin County Air District over 35 years ago, and then joined the Air District here 34 years ago. And I have to say, I've seen the changes of our board members. I've seen changes of the facility managers at sources being an inspector. And also I've seen the changes of staff. And let me tell you, when I came here 34 years ago and I seen people my age, I'm like, oh my God, they're old. And now I'm like going, what happened to the past 34 years? But I have to say, it's been such an honor and a privilege to work here. And I want to thank all the past board members, staff, the environmental coordinators for our industry, and our future board members and our future staff in industry. Without all of your help and support, we wouldn't have this clean air that we have. And we've made a lot of progress, which I am so proud that I've been part of. For instance, down in the oil fields, we have, back when I was an inspector going out doing inspections, the steam generators were operating off of their crude oil. So I'm always doing little violations for their opacity. Today, they have removed all the oil produced steam generators, and they're exclusively on natural gas, which is ideal because it's all clean. And also going to the Moss Landing Power Plant. I was out there and they used to have the big tanks of oil, which you had the tanker ship, actually the big ship that came in from Norway and would just unload thousands of gallons of crude oil, and where that's what they used to operate their 6171 boilers on. And then over the years, they ceased operation of the crude oil and installed SCR. And now those boilers have been decommissioned and they only fire on natural gas. So we've done a lot, and it's so much to be proud of. And I'm so happy to say that I've been part of that journey, and so proud that we have had amazing board members who supported and provided all the direction right along with staff and our regulated industry. So thank you all.
Thank you, Teresa, on behalf of the board. And would any board members like to comment? Have any comments?
Just thank you for providing those examples, because now I can actually tell, you know, why I'm here for, like, family members and, you know, constituents, because that brings a great perspective. Because yeah. Usually it's the airport. What do you guys do? It's like, well, yeah, it's like a little convoluted agency. Like, it's hard to explain, but it, like your examples have given me a thought process that I can replicate. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, at this time, we will move on to item five. This is public comments. And at this time, anyone may address the committee during public comment period up to 3 minutes. And items on today's agenda, I will open that up for public comment at that time. So anything that's not on the agenda but related to Monterey Bay Air Resources, now's the time. If you'd like to make a comment, please come up to the podium and state your name.
We don't have anyone online with their hands raised up. We don't receive anything, and no hands are raised in the boardroom.
Okay. With that, I will close public comment and bring it back to item six. We'll move on to reports by committee chairs on committee meetings. We'll go to the budget personnel nominating committee meeting. Would you like to report
sure,
out?
Yeah, Colin? Do that. Sure thing, Chair. So essentially the main item was the budget, and we got the presentation. I believe we'll have a similar one, but we did recommend, as recommended from the staff, the approval of the 26-27 budget. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And with that, I don't believe we had an advisory committee meeting.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The advisory committee did meet as a committee of the whole, which means we didn't have a necessary quorum. So we did go over some of the items that were listed on the agenda, but no action was taken and it was not recorded.
Okay. Well, thank you, Richard. With that, any comments and referrals from chair and board members at this time? Any comments? Not seeing any. I will go ahead and close that out and bring it. We'll go move to the item is the consent agenda. So the consent agenda consists of routine items, which are routine and non-controversial. One motion may cover the consent item and authorize the recommended actions. With that, I will open it up to public comment at this time. Any public comment on the consent item? And the consent item is actually one item, and it is to accept and file summary actions for February 18, 2026, the Board of Directors meeting.
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion, Alejo.
Sure, and just so it's clear, it's actually 8 through 15 on consent on the following page as well.
Oh, sorry. I didn't turn the page. Thank you.
Second.
We had a motion and a second. Roll call vote, please.
Director Sandoval? Director Montesino?
Yes.
Director Labar?
Aye.
Director Kuzmicki?
Yes.
Director Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carbone?
Yes.
Director Eskew?
Aye.
Director Alejo? Approved.
Moving on to the regular agenda, item 16, receive a report on Assembly Bill 2561 regarding vacancy reporting obligations, and Rosa will give us a presentation.
Thank you. Good afternoon, members of the board. So AB 2561 was signed into law in September 2024, and it requires public agencies to present the status of job vacancies and the recruitment and retention efforts at a public hearing prior to the adoption of the budget. So the vacancy rate, if it exceeds 20% of the authorized full-time employee positions, we would be required to provide additional information to the union organization, which is SEIU. Currently, we have 36 budgeted positions, and 27 of those are represented. We have two vacancies. One is to the recent retirement of Teresa Sewell, and we had an internal promotion with that. That was Bronwyn Nielsen was promoted to that position. So her position in the compliance division is now vacant. And then the other position was the air monitoring specialist that was approved at the February board meeting. So this brings us to an 8% vacancy rate. So we're going to do recruitment for these positions probably be before the end of April. And there's typically a 60 to 75 day turnaround from the date of posting to the date that they come on board. So we've had really good responses in the last 2 years due to our competitive salaries benefits. We have training programs. So we don't think we'll have difficulty filling these positions. There's no proposed additions to the personnel for the fiscal year 26 and 27 budget. So with that, I'll take any questions if there are any.
Any questions, directors? You were very thorough with your report, Rosa. I will open it up to Public comment at this time. Public comment is open.
There are no hands raised online. We did not receive anything. Okay. And there are no hands raised in the boardroom.
Okay. Public comment is closed. Do I need a motion here since Mayor LaVar is via Zoom? This is to the item is recommendation is to receive the report on Assembly Bill 2561 regarding the vacancy reporting obligations.
Okay.
I have a motion and a second. Roll call vote.
What was the second? Thank you. All right. Director Eskew.
Aye.
Vice Chair Carbone.
Aye.
Director Alejo. Director Jensen. Director Kosmicki.
Yes.
Director Montesino.
Yes.
Director Sandoval.
Yes.
Director LaBar.
Aye.
Approves unanimously.
All right. Well, thank you. And we'll move on to item 17. And Rosa could stay there.
Yeah.
This is they'll hold the first public hearing on proposed budget fiscal year 2026-27 and provide direction to staff.
Okay, so thank you again. I did this presentation at the Budget and Personnel Committee. So today I'll be presenting the draft budget for fiscal year 26-27. So I'm going to go just over these items, the budget development, the budget in brief, the total revenues and expenses, our organizational structure, and some of our budget schedules. So in February, we met with the management team to review the last year of current year budgets and for them to have some input in the fiscal year 26-27 budgets. In February 27th, those budgets were due. We had workshops at the end of April, at end of March, beginning of April. We met in Watsonville, Santa Cruz, and San Bernardino counties. There was no public comment on any of those workshops. And today's the first public hearing of the budget. And then in June would be the final, second and final, and July 1st, our fiscal year begins. So our budget in brief, total budget is about $21 million, and that includes the operating budget of $9.8 million, which includes all of our operating costs, salaries, benefits, any travel trainings, expenses for IT, expenses for all of our expenses. Our non-operating budget includes all of our grants. So that's all our grant payments. That's about $11.3 million, and it also includes our OPEB and pension trust account contributions. So we have a proposed fee increase of $2.2 million, and that's based on the consumer price index from San Francisco, Oakland, Hayward, and it was 2.2 for 2025. Our fixed assets are about $236,000, and that includes some computer and server items. We have new air monitoring equipment that is needed to be purchased. And then we have a new vehicle for the air monitoring specialist that's going to be coming in and replacing an older compliance vehicle. Our OPEB and pension trust deposits will total about $300,000. That'll be $50,000 for the OPEB and $250,000 for our pension trust. And then our grants is about $10.9 million. And that includes $500,000 of the electric vehicle incentives. And then we've got about $50,000 that we're carrying over from the current year's budget for the wood stove changeout. Okay. So these are our total revenues for the year. It's just shy of $21 million. Our largest category comes from state grants, which is about $6.8 million. And that's followed by our DMV fees of $4.1 million, and then our permit fees of $3.5 million. We have interest income. I increased it this year based on current and prior year interest, and interest is allocated across all funds, so this is not all for the general fund. General fund comes in about $300,000, so just the general fund is not restricted. And then we've got city and county contributions, about $500,000, the subvention grant, $177,000. Other federal grants of $428,000. And then our other revenues and Title V and asbestos fees. So our expenditures total about $21 million, with the largest category is grant payments of $10 million. It's followed by salaries and benefits, which is about $6.8 million. Professional services, $1.5 million, and that includes about $900,000 of pass-through funds that we collecting for advanced technology grant that we received from CARB for the whale watching vessel. And then we've got EPA Inflation Reduction Act monies that we're still going through. Other admin expenses include insurance, memberships, travel training, board stipends expenses. And then other expenditures include the OPEB pension trust and then transfers to the Clean Air Fund for our policy. So 20% of our prior year penalties and fines goes to the Clean Air Fund. Okay. So this is our organizational structure. Currently we have 35 and we're proposing 36. So that's just the new air monitoring specialist that was proposed in February. Okay. So then our budget schedules on page 92, if you want to look in your packet, that's where this budget schedule is at. So our total operating budget is $9.8 million. This includes the proposed 2.2% fee increase for the permit fees. It's about $61,000 total. City and county contributions, we're proposing a 5-cent increase, and the total estimated increase is about $38,000. Salaries and benefits increase about $211,000 over the fiscal year 25-26 budget. And then projected off operating deficit is going to be about $544,000. So our operating revenue, let's just list, the categories that we have. EPA grants, we have two EPA grants that we get, and it's the 103 grant for the PM 2.5 and the 105 grant. So that totals about $529,000. We have state subvention grant, $177,000. Permit fees, 3.5. Title V is $655,000. DMVs is 1.1. City and county contributions, $500,000. Grant admin funds, $726,000. State-funded revenues. So these are the additional grants for prescribed burn, oil and gas, AB 617. That's about $279,000. Then we've got other revenues that includes, like, rent. I can't remember what else is in that category. I forgot. But penalties and fines about $201,000, and then interest income about $300,000. Okay. So this is a history of all of our permit fee revenues. So the red is our Title V, and as you can see, it's been pretty stable the last, since 2019. Hasn't changed much. But then our permit fee revenues in blue. There hasn't been a lot of change in the last few years. There's a slight dip this year because we had some cancellations and permits. So it did actually affect us a little bit. Okay. And then this is just a description of our fixed assets. So our air monitoring equipment is going to be about $50,000. Our IT equipment, server and computer equipment is about $95,000. And then two vehicles, about $95,000. So this is our non-operating budget. It's $11.3 million. This includes grant funding, electric vehicle infrastructure, and other non-operating expenditures. So this lists all of our grant programs. AB 2766 monies, we're going to be spending about $2.2 million in grants and $500,000 for electric vehicle incentives. AB 923, there's about $3 million in grants and $10,000 for EV infrastructure. Carl Moyer, $2 million for ag and marine vessels, and then offsite mitigation grants, about $150,000 that comes East Garrison, the East Garrison, and then wood stove changeout grants. It's $50,000. That's a carryover from the current year from the Clean Air Fund. And then Community Air Protection Program is just CAP. It's about $2 million, and that can be only used in the disadvantaged communities. And then farmer programs, about $1 million for farm equipment and irrigation pumps, et cetera. And then the OPEB and pension total, about $300,000. So then this is our projected general fund balance at the end of 2027. Unreserved is about 7.1 million. And then we have the ones that are designated for different categories. Economic uncertainty is about 2.4. OPEB and pension, we have a reserve in there for about 530. Our building is about 100,000. And so our total projected funded balance is about 10.1 million. With that, I'll take any direction for to staff and any questions.
At this time, directors, have any questions? Yes, Jerry.
Any concerns about the funding from the grant programs from the feds or from the state level?
Okay, take it, Rich.
Through the chair. Yes, thank you. That's a great question. It was asked earlier. And what I can tell you is what's been sort of telegraphed by the Trump administration, that our federal grants for general air quality, as well as our PM2.5 air monitoring, the 105 and 103 grants are zeroed out in the president's budget. So that's about a $500,000 switch. In addition, EPA is no longer doing enforcement, from what I understand, asbestos and other federally enforceable permits. They are going to dissolve their Office of Enforcement and Compliance. So that will put the burden and onus on the district to provide additional enforcement that was federal. We can always let that go. Serious cases involve emission violations and potential public health impacts. So it's not like we can turn a blind eye. So yeah, there are potential issues down the road for the agency, federal funding. But as you can see, that's not a significant portion of the money we have. And our grants, although those are large, it should be noted that we don't use that money in-house. It's basically giveaway, and we can take back up to 15% for most of those grant programs to use to administer the passing through of those dollars. So it's a large amount, but it's basically, we only retain a small fraction for in-house use specific to those programs.
Madam Chair, Director Barr has his hand up.
Okay. Director LaBarr.
Thank you, Chair. Rich, following up on the last question.
He muted himself.
Oh. Sorry about that. Rich, following up on the last question, the answer you provided. So you said the 101 and 103, those will be eliminated, roughly about a $500,000 total.
That's correct. The 105, which the state territorial air pollution control grant, it's a STAG grant that goes out to local states and tribes.
Okay.
As well as the PM, the 103 grant, which is dealing just for particulate matter pollution and air monitoring efforts.
But and are both of those programs ones that we would not want to end?
Currently, it looks like we're going to be okay this coming year. So the federal budget doesn't coincide with our fiscal budget. So. Any changes could take place in October, and you know Congress has to approve this. So this is just what we're hearing right now. But there's a, as you know from listening to the news, there's a huge push from the administration now on pushing things down to the state and local level and insulating the feds against any of those costs. So
okay,
it may be likely, it's not 100% for sure, but it has been stated that those will be zeroed out.
Okay, and then on the enforcement, you had mentioned, while that would be going away on the federal side, we would need to pick up the slack here locally. Is that correct?
That's correct, and that usually comes in the form of hiring outside counsel to prosecute cases if EPA is not willing to do so.
Okay.
So we've done that in the past and been quite successful.
And is in those types of cases, is outside counsel's fees recoupable through a judgment?
Yes. In fact, we've had some hybrid relationships where there was actually a percentage as well as a cost recover for actual time spent.
Okay, and then a question. So it looked like we earned one, I think it was 1.7 million and some change in interest. And I would assume that is on our unreserved plus the reserved balance of that 10 million. Is that correct?
That is correct.
That interest, what are we allocating that to right now?
That's basically residing in the general, the reserve fund. So that can be appropriated for special projects or to whatever the board would deem appropriate.
Okay. And so, yeah, my thought is if 105 and 103 are ones that are going to end up being more locally funded, and we believe those are important programs, as well as the enforcement, that is that we may look at the interest as the ability to fund those programs. And at least in that case, it's money earned and it's coming from an outside source, you know, from the bank that is providing an interest. And that might be a way that going forward, once we find a resolution to whatever happens with these programs and the enforcement side of it, the ability to have revenues to continue those programs that we feel are still needed and necessary. So that'd be my comment. Thank you, Chair.
I will just respond to that by saying thank you for your comment. And we would come to the board if that indeed happened and we could access those monies. I should also state that we haven't gotten our actuarial report yet with respect to our pension trust, but we're severely in the hole there to the tune. Last one was $7 million. So I don't think it's improved, although we did commit about $500,000 this last year to help offset those costs. So if you look at standard, accounting principles, we're pretty much breaking even with that, even though that is a huge budget. So that counts against the liabilities against the district.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Any other directors' comments or questions? Did I open this up to the public?
Not yet.
Okay. Okay. So at this time, if there's no other director comments, public comment is open.
There are no hands raised online. We did not receive anything at the office, and I do not see any hands raised in the boardroom.
Okay. Thank you, Siri. So with that, I will close public comment. And the recommendation was this is to hold the first public hearing of the proposed budget for fiscal year 26-27 and to provide direction to staff. This here will come back at another time, Richard?
Yes.
Thank you. With that, we will go ahead and move on to the next item, item 18.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rosa. And this is to hold another first public hearing to consider adoption of a resolution approving proposed revisions to the following fee rules and provide direction to staff. And with this, we have Amy.
Hello. Good afternoon, Board of Directors. So as part of the budget process each year, we propose a fee increase. And next slide. And so this year we have three fee rules, and our main fee schedule is contained in Rule 301. But because we're going through this process, we kind of looked through and we found in some other changes that we are making that are more administrative in some of the other rules. Next slide. So as Rosa mentioned, we're proposing a 2.2% fee increase, which is based on the CPI for the San Francisco, Oakland, Hayward area. In Rule 300, we're going to add a minimum line processing fee. We're going to identify July as the month to renew emission reduction credit registries. 301, we're going to add two fee schedules. And Rule 310, we're going to add some clarifications to the language. And so I'll go into more detail on that next. Slide. So first, I just kind of wanted to show what does a 2.2% increase mean on some of our lower fee categories. So our filing fee right now is $250. That would increase by $6. Another category is our annual renewal fee. That billable tons for the smallest sources is $250, $249. This would be a $5 increase at 2.2%. So it would go up to $254. Our hourly staff rate would increase from $178 to $182. Next slide. So in Rule 300, we have a special fee category for the Lawast plant out in Salinas. And it's based on them operating their kilns depending on the production rate. And we have two categories, less than 100,000 tons or greater than 100,000 tons. And unfortunately, they have not operated those kilns in a couple of years. And so basing it on a three-year average would result in $0. And so we cannot have no fees for a company that has active permits with us. So we're proposing to add in a minimum kiln production fee. We also have something similar in for our federal Title V permit fee rule. We have a minimum operating fee. And so we're proposing to put in a minimum fee of $1,791. And that would be a little bit less than what they paid for the prior year's fees, but it would keep this fee category from going to zero. Next slide. So then the next change is we have something called emission reduction credits. And each year, the companies that hold a registry in our bank of emission reduction credits is assessed a fee. And right now it's approximately $236. But we only have 15 registered accounts and they're billed over 8 months. So it's a fairly inefficient process to be doing these 15 invoices over 8 months. So we're proposing to consolidate those and bill them all at the same time in the month of July. And we also bill like all of our ag engine registrations in the month of July. So we're trying to just consolidate some activities to do at the same time of the year. So that's what that change would be. Next slide. And then in Rule 301, we're proposing to add two fee schedules. The first one is a Rule 200 fee. And from time to time, we'll find equipment operating without a permit. And this would be to possibly recover some costs at the time that they apply for a permit for that equipment that's been operating without a permit. And so that would be $254. Next slide. And then this is a new fee schedule. It would be called incident response. And we got this idea. We found that the Bay Area Air District has an incident response fee. So we based on our issue last year with the battery storage fire, we thought it might be a useful way for us to possibly recover some costs for engaging in those kinds of activities. And so we added this fee schedule that would be based on our hourly staff rate and then any costs for materials that we had to acquire to support those kinds of incidents. Next slide. And then Rule 310 is our registration fee rule for agricultural diesel engines. And last year we made a change to how we do expired permits. So when somebody doesn't pay their annual permit fees after 120 days, their permit expires. And so we added an extra 30 days at the end before we'll absolutely expire it. So we just for clarification wanted to put that language also and apply it to the agricultural engine registrations. So next slide. So we didn't receive, as Rosa mentioned, we didn't receive any public comments at the three public workshops that we had. We still have our everything posted on our website. We'll take comments until June 5th. We mailed out over 1,000 notices in English and Spanish to all of our permit holders. We also have a rule email list. We emailed everyone on that list where to find the information on our website. And Siri's got everything on our everything's been on our website and then social media in the newspaper. So tried to hit as many people as we can. Next slide. So with that, I'll take any comments and direction.
Okay. Thank you, Amy. Comments from directors? Richard.
Yes, Madam Chair, if I may, I'd just like to remind the board that the incident response fee that we developed for this iteration of our fee rules was in response to a request of the board that we find a way to somehow regulate or permit battery storage facilities. And through a lot of research and looking at other air districts, we found that we have no hook to permit a facility like that for emergencies. However, this seems like the second best approach, unless we wanted to sponsor a bill to change the law to allow us to regulate something that doesn't have emissions except for emergencies, which could apply to anything. So we think this is a pretty good way to get to where we need to go and still be able to recoup costs.
Thank you. Wendy.
Yeah, thank you. No, I think it's actually a really interesting solution to a situation that left us with just across so many agencies, large expenditure of resources without any way to have those costs covered. And I can see how it would be relevant in a number of maybe to be seen situations. I guess the question would be, we're putting the fee in, but the guidelines by which we would be collecting, there's certain situations where we wouldn't be collecting, but others where we would collecting. And are we clear in how we outline the differentiation between those situations? So it'd be one question. And the second question, are there any other air districts who have something similar? Or are we leading, finding our path?
Yeah, so I will say I did take this language pretty close to verbatim from what the Bay Area already has in their fee rule. But I think some of the language in here does say like it would be from an inspection of a facility where, you know, we have some authority. I don't think we would use this if we wouldn't go respond to a house fire and charge the person for that. So we're really looking more for the types of facilities that we would regulate. Not necessarily the equipment, but that we regulate the Moss Landing site, and that would be our way to try to get some support for that.
Great, yeah. Thank you. That answered my question.
Any other directors?
Yes, Director Labar's hands raised.
Director Labar. Thank you. I had a similar question and concern. So, why? It seemed like it'd be more appropriate on the incident response to be very clear on what that would entail and to make sure that it's never about the current staff or the current board. It's always about in the future and the interpretation of it.
The language says any facility required to have permits with MBARD or any other MBARD regulated source is a site where an incident occurs. So that was our attempt to try to limit where we could apply this fee.
And I should add, it's also at the discretion of the agency. This was not intended to, just be a moneymaker to start charging people for incident response. And we'd have to do incident response. And we do a lot of that. I mean, we get faxed almost or emailed almost every day reports from the Office of Emergency Services to look into spills and so forth. And we spend time on that. We don't charge. And we're looking, this was I don't know how we could write our fee rule to reflect this, but this is just a tool in the toolkit to, if we need to, we could charge and get some reimbursement for hours spent. And we did spend a lot of time on the power plant and we didn't get any type of compensation for that. So I think this would just allow us to do that. There's nothing that requires us to do this. It would just be, as I said, something that we could reach for if we needed it to, if we had significant amount of time. And, I don't have an answer as to what that means, but it's significant, which is probably more than a couple hours. So, but we spent probably hundreds of hours on the power plant. So this would enable us to go back and collect some of those costs that we incurred.
Okay, and I would never think that in any manner that this was being used to just get money. Absolutely not. I think the intent is proper, and I don't have a problem with that. But I would rather see very, very tight borders on what you would do and where you could claim money at, because it's not about the current staff and the current board. It's about whoever may interpret in the future. Or you could make the interpretation that 2 hours is enough and we're going to start collecting at that point. You could make the interpretation at some point the expand to a house fire as part of a regulated facility or a concern. Being new, I would rather see extremely tight guardrails on this. So it is very, very clear to the public and to the board of where we would look at this recouping of costs of our time and our expenses and our energy. That'd just be my suggestion. It's up to the board, but I would prefer that.
So in response, I think we can tighten it up. I guess there's some questions that I have, though. Are you talking about indicating what type of facilities it applies to, or are you saying that we should better describe what an incident response is for the agency? And then I'll just say that we can't go after residential structures. That's not our purview. We have no statutory authority to do that. So this
okay.
would not be intended for that. So we have the guardrails of the work we do, which is primarily air quality, public health, and emissions to the environment, so that have impacts on air quality, public health. And that's basically what we're looking at. This could, I suppose, well, I won't, yeah, I just think that this was in response to the battery fire. And so that's currently what we intend. I guess we could specifically state that, but Mr. Labar's point, you know, we're not sure that in the future there may be something we need to apply this to that we haven't thought of yet. So, but we certainly can try to constrain it a little.
I think being brand new, it'd be best to constrain it to where you think that biggest facility is and leaving that, and then have those conversations in the future if further expansion is needed. I'd feel definitely more comfortable, but it is the board's decision. And I appreciate the answers from you, Rich. Thank you, Chair.
You're welcome, Director Labar. Directors, how do you feel with that comment?
Madam Chair, I'd rather not constrain it, just, you know, because of the unanticipated possibility of other things that we're not thinking of. And I think we can analyze further as we go here and see how this works out, maybe come back in a year or two and take another look at it. But I'd rather not limit the ability to collect the fees that are really justified. If there's an emergency, then clearly there should be some sort of fee collection. Thanks.
Okay. And Director Eske?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm reassured knowing that the language that we're using is coming from the Bay Area District, and would love to see us move forward with what we have right now. If anything, maybe we include we include a requirement that the board approves if we're going to submit it for a reimbursement, an incident response fee, that would provide some protection. But I do feel really comfortable with the language described it.
I should also state that, although I don't know this for sure, but I have a pretty good assumption that this law was, or rule was, predicated on exploding refineries up in the Bay Area. So that's what prompted them to do this, not battery fires. But to a previous question, just about every air agency has some sort of battery storage facility that's either in it or planned to go in it. In fact, I was in Santa Barbara a few months ago, and they have near my old office for the Air District, they installed a battery storage facility that is within 100 feet of condominiums and apartment complexes. And, I don't know how that happened, but they're a newer generation of battery that should have fewer problems than the one that caught fire in Moss Landing. So maybe that's some reassurance there.
Thank you. Any other directors before we move on? So I'm not seeing any others. I want to make sure I'm looking down to both sides. So with that, I'll bring it back to directors. The recommendation was to hold the first public hearing approving proposed revisions to the following fee rules and provide direction to staff. I believe staff heard direction on constraints. And with that, do we need a motion here? Or... Yeah, we do.
I don't think it would hurt to do a motion just to memorialize that this first public hearing's occurred okay. And whatever the board's directing on that particular okay. fee.
Thank you.
I'll move that we second hold the first public hearing and that we receive the rules as proposed.
Okay, we had a first and a second, and I will open it up to public comment at this time. Public comment is open.
There were no hands raised online. We did not receive anything at the office, and no hands are raised in the boardroom.
Okay. With that, I will close public comment and bring it back to the directors for a vote. So we had a first and a second, a roll call vote, Siri.
All right. Director Montesino.
Yes.
Director Sandoval.
Yes.
Director Labar.
Clarification Labar. On that motion. This includes the Schedule 12 incident response?
The fee.
Yes.
Yes, the fee as it's proposed.
Okay, no.
No, okay. Thank you. Director Kosmicki?
Yes.
Director Jensen?
Yes.
Director Deserpa?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carbon?
Aye.
Director Eskew?
Aye.
Director Alejo? Okay, it proves unanimously with one nay.
Okay, unanimously with one, all ayes and one no, Director Labar, for the record. And that carries. So with that, thank you. We will move on to the next item. This is item 19, and this is we are looking to adopt a resolution authorizing the air pollution control officer to apply for a portion of the AB 2766 annual revenues towards funding and implementing a program for motor vehicle emission reducing grants consistent with FY 2026-27 AB 2766 Emission Reduction Grant Program Guidelines. And you can find this on page 175 in your agenda. And with us, Dave Frisby will give us a staff report. Welcome. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you. My name is Eli Lessman.
Oh.
I'm an air quality planner, and Dave is the manager.
Oh, there he is. Okay.
I'm presenting information about the AB 2766 Motor Vehicle Emission Reduction Program. Since 1990, Assembly Bill 2766 has provided a revenue stream for programs to reduce air pollution for motor vehicles. Here, MBART collects $4 per DMV vehicle registration in the Tri-County area. Allocations are distributed to each county based on populations. At the bottom of the slide, you can see the three sub-programs that applicants directly apply to: the Clean Vehicle Program, Clean Air Management Program, and Electric Vehicle Incentive Program. The Clean Vehicle Program helps fund medium and heavy-duty on-road electric vehicles for public agencies. As you can see on the slide, medium and heavy-duty vehicles are greater than 10,000 pounds. According to the California Energy Commission, that's classes 3 through 8, includes a lot of what's on the road: large panel vans, heavy duty pickup trucks, school bus, transit buses, and more. The maximum award here is 200,000. The Clean Air Management Program is for public agencies to develop electric vehicle and active transportation infrastructure. The program can help local governments electrify their fleet and provide more and better access to public paths. The maximum award is 200,000. And all applications received in the Clean Vehicle Program and Clean Air Management Program are evaluated using the latest emission reduction methodologies. The Electric Vehicle Incentive Program is a non-competitive component. The maximum price an eligible vehicle may cost, excluding taxes, fees, warranties, and accessories, is $60,000. The program incentivizes residents, public agencies, and nonprofits to procure a clean light-duty vehicle. You can see in the chart on the right, the awards are specific to the applicant and vehicle type. And this cycle, we're looking at an enhanced low-income incentive that's $500 greater than the regular award. Last cycle, fiscal year 25-26, the total budget was $1.8 million, with $1.3 million going to the Clean Vehicle and Clean Air Management Programs, and $500,000 for the Electric Vehicle Incentive Program. Here's a few projects from last cycle. This is the Sand City Street Sweeper Replacement Project. The vehicle's delivered and will be in operation soon. This is the County of Santa Cruz General Services Project. It'll support large, publicly accessible Level 2 charging stations. And the site 2607C in Watsonville is a charging station in a disadvantaged community area. This project will support publicly accessible charging of electric vehicles at the City of Soledad Community Center. The award is approximately $167,000. Here's some information on the recently completed cycle of the Electric Vehicle Incentive Program. The program accepts applications on a first-come, first-served basis and started with $500,000 in funds on July 1st, 2025. As of February 13th, 2026, 100% of funds have been committed. This next cycle for fiscal year 26-27, the total budget is $1.9 million. Going to the same programs already described with these funding amounts. We're looking at $1.4 million for the Clean Vehicle and Clean Air Management Programs, and again, $500,000 for the Electric Vehicle Incentive Program. Here you can see the population-based funding recommendations by county. You can see in red for Santa Cruz County, the population is approximately 262,000, and that leads to a population-based funding recommendation of approximately $478,000. It's about 34% of the total fund. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion here? Directors, questions, comments? Director Esty? We'll start with Richard.
Thank you, Chair. This is in anticipation of Wendy's question. So this is business as usual. This is what we're showing you. However, we had had several discussions in the past about what it would look like if we did not do this program. So I'm saying to the board right now, you don't have to approve this. You can direct us to look into other programs. We don't have any ideas at this time for how this money would be spent. If we were to do away with, for instance, the EV program, we could roll all those dollars into our other program that looks at putting in infrastructure and changing out fleets across the three counties. And we've been doing that for many, many years. So we could do away with the EV incentive program. Not a problem. That $500,000 would get injected back into the program. Or if there's another program you'd like us to investigate or consider, we're certainly happy to do that. The only parameters have to be its mobile source air pollution reduction. So it can't be used for wood stoves, for instance, unless they're on wheels, which I haven't seen those yet. But we're looking at trying to reduce, since we're getting money from a motor vehicle account. So we have to apply those funds back towards the emission reductions of motor vehicles. It could be a public education. We've had that component in the past. So there is that, which could be ride and drive events and that sort of thing. So it's pretty much open to what you'd like. As I said, this previous boards have loved this program, but I can understand too that we've been incentivizing the purchase of EVs, and right now it's pretty much those that can afford it get the incentive. In fact, we get people that have already purchased the vehicle and said, hey, by the way, I heard something that I can get an incentive, which is, at that point, it's not a recent incentive, it's a rebate. So we're open to anything you guys would like to see us do. You know, there's been discussion of bike programs in the past that has not been successful at the state or our level. However, we could contract out. We've already done this with these funds with the Santa Cruz Regional Transportation Commission. They actually have a bike program that we're funding. So it works better when we're not maintaining it, because we're not built to process $500 applications from the public. So I'll just say that in case you were wondering what happened. Well, we don't have any other programs. The simplest, if you wanted to do away with the program, would be to reinject those funds back into the overall program fund. And then lastly, I'll just say that we get almost $4 million from our AB 2766, the $4 registration fee. And per state guidelines, half of that gets to be used by the district to implement programs that are related to the air quality laws, and most notably mobile sources. So for instance, monitoring gets a big chunk of that money, because air monitors are picking up automobile emissions, which are one of the major sources of air pollution in our district. So then the rest of that money, as you see, the $1.9 million is to be given away in grants. And I will say that a lot of air districts don't do this. A lot of take that money and just use it for operational in-house use, which we've been sued a couple of times on this. And we've had good counsel in the past that say that we should follow the state guideline. And we're also, to tell you the truth, so we're working at the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association level to get this fund increased. Now, that would require a two-thirds majority vote at the legislature if they wanted to pass an increase. But this $4 goes back to 1990, so it has not really stayed with inflation, which has averaged about 3% a year. So we think there's good uses, but there are air districts that don't want their books to be looked at because they're not appropriately using the money. So I'll let you know if this is coming up, but for right now we're looking at $4, and we're open to any type of changes you want to see or want us to investigate. We're happy to do that.
Thank you. It's almost like you were reading my mind, Richard. We're channeling all of our previous conversations. I think you hit on some of the questions that I have. And really, I think it's for the board about how we invest these dollars to achieve the goals of reducing emissions from vehicles. And the $500, specifically the portion of it that's the $500,000 for the electric vehicle incentive program, I think we've made tremendous progress in sort of bringing electric vehicles into the marketplace. There's a lot of infrastructure that still needs to be built out. But when we're talking about the incentive specifically, I don't know that I'm seeing that. I don't know that I've the evidence anecdotally to hear that that's a reason why someone's gonna choose to purchase an electric car over a different kind of car. And the individuals who have the ability to purchase a new or used electric car, I think we could have tremendous impact with those dollars in ways that would look different. So I guess I'm questioning the $500,000 for the electric vehicle incentive program, and I think it would be worthwhile to ask Richard to engage with Monterey City Transit to think about, they've got some big projects that are underway to plan for a reality where we have more and more gridlocked, or any of our other, so MST or our other transit serving agencies in our other counties,
But we have more and more situations where we have gridlock situations with people in their cars, and the ability to plan for alternative modes of transit is what will ultimately allow for future generations to not have to sit in that traffic in their cars. And I see a more direct correlation between the goal that we're trying to achieve with these air pollution control dollars versus helping someone who is already able and planning to purchase an electric vehicle to do so. The other piece of it, and I actually did just this weekend have a conversation with two people who were talking about their e-bikes and how much they love them. And I said, oh, we had an incentive program a while back. And he said, yeah, through the air, there was an air district and we got money. And that's how we got our e-bikes. They now use their e-bikes to go to work and back. I was like, oh, that's fantastic. Anyway, I got excited. And I do think that looking at the e-bike model again, as we continue to build more apartments and low-income housing with limited parking availability, we just approved just the specific plan of the county at East Garrison to put in a new Chispa, a building with low-income apartments. And we're only providing one parking lot per parking space per multi-bedroom unit. So we know that those individuals are going to need alternative modes of transportation, and there will be a trail being put in. So even if we were to look at talking to some of our low-income apartment complexes to have them administer a program out, the Light Fighter Village in Marina with the Veteran Transition Center, they're providing most of those residents with an electric bike, and those residents are using those bikes in communities. So I would love for us to think about that differently, and that's up to the board to have that conversation. But I'm ready to see us move in a different direction.
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
I respectfully disagree. I actually think we should expand the program. Since the feds cut the $7,500 incentive, the sales of EVs have plummeted. And I believe it's somewhere close to 50%. And we're, part of our job is to promote these uses by the public. And, I just recently, unfortunately, had to go purchase a vehicle because my old one was not doing well. And I ended up getting a hybrid. When I was speaking to the owner of the lot, basically, he said that the sale of EVs has just completely gone off the cliff since the incentives went away at the federal level. So I just feel like we would be further diminishing the incentive for people to purchase these vehicles if we went in a different direction. And so I would actually prefer putting a little more money toward the EV incentive program as opposed to less or eliminating it. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. And Director DeSuca.
And I'm sorry, Supervisor Askew, but I respectfully also disagree. I am somebody that was incentivized by the federal and the state rebates, essentially, and was able to purchase a plug-in hybrid, not completely electric, but I had a list of cars I could buy. And at that time, Teslas were out, Toyotas were out. Like, I had to go down the list because they had already sold their quotas or whatever of those EVs, and I could choose between a Nissan or a BMW. So you can guess what I got. I got a BMW because I've never had a fancy car like that. I was driving at the time like a 2006 Prius with 300,000 miles on it. So so for me, that incentive mattered. There's no way I could have bought the car that I ended up with without it. And it ended up being actually similarly priced to the Nissan Leaf, so, which was fully electric. Mine isn't fully electric, but it definitely is great. Cuts down. I get 60 miles to the gallon or something. So I think it is a good program, and I'd like to keep it in place.
Any other directors?
Yeah, I have a question. The incentive program, how is it tied to income? How is it tied to income?
There's a low income enhanced incentive. If you qualify for the low income home energy assistance program, LIHEAP, you would get this cycle an extra $500 on top of the regular award, which was those awards in the chart on that slide. If we could just pull that up for the gentleman.
Right. And have you seen any other agencies? I don't remember if the e-bike was also tied to income. The e-bike program was also tied to income in some way. It was complete. Yeah, you know, because we heard some people say it's more of a rebate sometimes. What if the board was to consider tying that strictly to serve our low income residents? Have you seen that before?
Actually, that's a good point, and I'd say that's a good compromise, since some of the concerns are that this money is getting out to those people who can already afford an electric vehicle. So we could attempt to design a program that would better serve low-income communities. And the example I would give is our wood stove changeout program. Since we received $0 from the state to implement that program, we used the basically minimal amount that we had available to fund low income only for wood stove changeout programs. And it's actually going pretty well. In fact, I think it's doing better than when we've serviced everybody. So we could change up the program to look just at low income qualified applicants. And I will say this about Eli and the rest of the staff. We have knocked this out of the park. We've really gotten good at doing incentives for vehicles. It's all automated online, and we process the information really well. And we don't seem to have that much fraud going on, and we have some good checks. The bike program was a nightmare. We had people buying and returning bikes, and it was just, we had people camping in our garage. But I would say to the bike program, that's available right now to anybody who wants it, including those, they can apply under our other program to receive funding for a bicycle program. We'd be happy to look at that and potentially award for apartment complexes or entities that want to take on that type of program. And we think that would be legit. It takes a lot off our plate, because handling $500 at a time and the number of people that would be showing up is, it just totally overwhelmed us, especially with all the problems. And we had a lot of fraud going on too. So that's one of the reasons. The state also had a bike program and they cut it because it wasn't working for the various reasons. So the same reason. So we're, you know, we're open, but somebody like the Regional Transportation Commission applied for a grant and was awarded a $200,000 grant to do a bike, e-bike program, and we funded it. So there's no, we're pretty agnostic when it comes to that. It's just operating a program similar to the electric vehicle incentive program for bicycles proved to be a little too much for us. So, but folks are still, if they have, know people who are interested in bike, electric bike, programs, please tell them to apply. We can help them with their application.
And how many of the applicants that we processed were low income this last cycle?
With respect to...
there's some information on the slide about the past cycle.
I'm gonna...
It wasn't that much far off in the past few years.
I think
the electric vehicle incentive program slide, the one with the chart about last cycle. Next, so there was 27. I don't know what percentage of that is off the top of my head. It was a few more than last cycle. We also had a few more funds in the program than last cycle.
Yeah, I mean, I would be in support of transitioning that to just low income to serve low income populations. And as we do face, as Supervisor Askew mentioned, you know, trying to support those residents who don't have that possibility of buying cars and see how we could possibly, we're going to say something to her.
I think that's a great idea, but there should be some contingency plan, because 500,000 was enough for a program for all residents. But since we only received 27 eligible applications through LIHEAP, there might be need for some contingency plan for the funds.
Right, and I think that's what I was speaking to, possibly using some of those funding for like MST or other projects like that, to really tie that to low income applications.
So I would just tell you that MST is very successful with this program, and we've given them millions upon millions of dollars over the years. We paid completely for a number of buses for their electric buses and vehicles. We paid for, you know, route changes and that sort of thing. And so, they apply pretty much every year and are awarded a pretty good grant every year. But we could change it up to, we only have a $200,000, we have a $200,000 cap right now for grant awards, and that could be changed too if the board thinks that's appropriate too. It was 400 at one point, but we try to get the money spread out to various entities that apply. So putting a cap on that or a constraint helps us get it out to more folks who apply.
And Director LaBarre's hands up too.
I will go to Director LaBarre and then we'll come back to Director Kosmiski.
Thank you. Good discussion. I think for me, last year on the slide, we had 1.3 for the one set of projects and then 500,000 for the incentives. I would kind of go along with that we should be increasing the incentives. So 1.3 for the project, 600,000 for electric vehicle incentives. My main concern is we have hydrogen fuel cell, which is there's not really a lot of the ability to fuel up there. And we give a lot of grants out to the infrastructure side, which is charging stations. So I honestly, I would prefer to see us increase the incentive for battery electric. So we're matching up, we're putting money in for battery charging systems. Let's match it up with the vehicles that will actually use those. And I'd rather see more of that, because otherwise, if we're not promoting the item that will be used for the infrastructure we're putting in, it doesn't make sense. So I'd like to see an increase from $1,500 to make that the $2,500 one, and then leave everything else the same. If you want to add in a little more for plug-in hybrid, but I would increase it from $500 to $600,000. If we're selling out every year, there is an appetite for the program. That means that the people do understand there's this program available. And the fact that they already have that information, we don't have to go resell some new program. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Director.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I would, hearing everything, I would propose maybe another layer of compromise, which would be if you take an additional, let's just say $100,000, and to set that aside specifically for low-income category to increase the low-income allocation, to put more of a commitment toward the low-income portion of it, or to, if there's not a willingness to shift, as Mayor LaBarre is saying, to take the current amount and to do a shift toward the low-income, so that perhaps there might be another $500 or $1,000 allocated to the low-income. And if they don't, and if there isn't enough demand at a certain point, perhaps you then would reopen the pool, or we can reanalyze and go forward into the following year. But I think that might be a healthy compromise to either increase the amount, shift that all toward low income, or to take the current amount and to shift more toward low income and a little bit less toward non-low income. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for considering my perspective on this. And I hear the support for the EBIT program. And given that, I think that the suggestion about making sure that it's going to those, so that it really does, it is resulting in an electric car purchase that wouldn't have occurred otherwise, is really, I think, the outcome to get to. And so if that low income, or if it's, you know, some medium income, middle income rate, 200-250% federal poverty limit, so that for households with a higher amount, it would need to be, of course, you know, we just looked at cars too. They're $30,000. I mean, it's I don't know who can afford a car. So having that incentive in place at a rate that makes it possible for someone who would otherwise be purchasing a different car, I can totally support that concept.
We'll also commit to designing a program that looks better at incentivizing rather than giving a rebate. That was the major intent of the program initially, but we got caught up in our own red tape and ended up, we've learned a lot by implementing this program. So we'll bring something back to the board that looks more responsibly at dedicating more funds towards low income. And we won't do away with the whole program, but we can address those things that we heard, in including incentivizing, making a better incentive for the purchase of a vehicle. So that's what I'm hearing. And I would just say, if you have a project or you're aware of a project in your county or city, or, you know, of an entity that needs funding, you know, we can always cobble together some funding. We've got some money that's been sort of swelling in our ranks because of the backlog on manufacture of buses. The pipeline was totally clogged during COVID, and a number of companies went out of business. So fulfilling those orders now has been very challenging. And MST is one of those agencies that is not able to receive new buses yet. Thank goodness you were able to get, Sand City was able to receive the street cleaner. But some of those manufacturers are having a really tough time fulfilling orders at this point.
Yes, and I'll comment in a moment. Director DeSerpa?
I was just going to thank Supervisor Rudaskew for including middle income people. I've been to electric car shows that have been in our county, and there have been a number of people I've talked to who are seniors on fixed incomes that never would have been able to buy an electric car without some type of incentive. So thank you for including the middle income. It's hard to afford the cost of living. And so people are just, even if they're middle income, they're having a hard time making ends meet. So I appreciate that. And Santa Cruz has 53 hydrogen buses. Be happy to sell some of those to Monterey County if you need those.
We were also in talks with MST about installing a hydrogen fueling facility. So that's on the table too, if you're aware of hydrogen fueling projects. The other thing is, manufacture of hydrogen gas would be a great thing for Monterey County. And, you know, the perfect place for that was near the Moss Landing power plant. I'm not sure that would fly now, but that was one of my hopes and dreams, is that we could bring manufacture, because the transport of hydrogen gas is problematic too. So if you could have a local facility that's manufacturing it using solar power to split sodium hydroxide and water to make hydrogen, that would be beautiful from an air quality perspective. I know from a public perspective, public regulations perspective, installing the Hindenburg out near a battery facility is not going to probably fly, but we're open to those types of ideas and approaches.
Thank you, Mr. Stedman. And you do have a few MST directors sitting on this board, so they have heard, and they could bring that information back to Carl. And on behalf of the city of Sand City, we did receive our electric sweeper, and we are very grateful for the help. We are just putting that money into our budget today, and so budget revision, so that we could pay that for that, because it was an additional $500,000, I think, to be able to apply that. So it was very, it's hard for cities. And that was very helpful. So that's our first electric vehicle that we have received. So
appropriate vehicle for Sand City.
Yeah. it gets very sandy there. Okay. With that, and I did want to recognize Director Askew in regards to housing and less parking, and parking not being provided. That's happening all over the place, that's handed down from the state, from the governor. So just in regulations, local planning has been overruled, and that is what they have to do, build close to transit, which is good. So more people taking transit. So with that, that's the end of my comment, and I will bring it back. So there is a recommendation to adopt a resolution authorizing the APO to apply a portion of the AB 2766 annual revenues towards funding and implementing a program for motor vehicle emission reducing grants consistent with the 2627 and AB 2766 emission reduction grant program. But I did not take this out to public comment, so I'm going to do that now. At this time, public comment is open.
There are no hands raised online. We did not receive anything at our office, and there are no hands raised in the boardroom.
Thank you. Closing public comment, and I will bring it back to the directors. There has been some discussion here, and do you have language for that, Richard? Okay, well, with that,
I'll move approval of the staff recommendation.
We have a motion for approval. Do I hear a second?
I'll just make that with the discussion considered around changes to the electric vehicle incentive program to have it focus on incentives for lower and middle income.
A second.
And we have a second, Director DeSerfa. Siri, roll call vote, please.
Okay. Director Sandoval.
Aye.
Director Montesino.
Yeah.
Director Labar.
Aye.
Director Kusmicki.
Yes.
Director Jensen. Director DeSerpa.
Aye.
Director Eskew.
Aye.
Director Alejo.
Aye.
Vice Chair Carbone.
Aye.
Approved unanimously.
Thank you. And with that, we will move on to item 20, report from Air Pollution Control Officer. Richard?
Okay. Hey, Siri? Photo? Okay, great. All right. So thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. It's actually with sadness I bring unfortunate news about one of MBARD's former employees, Scott Norton. An air monitoring specialist who worked for MBARD for over 31 years and retired a few years ago, passed away last week at the age of 68. He was involved in a fatal car accident on Highway 68. He was the sole occupant vehicle occupant of the vehicle he was driving, and no other vehicles were involved. Scott is survived by his wife, Kathy, and two daughters. Scott was a true Renaissance man and a wonderfully human being. Not only was he a skilled air quality monitoring specialist, but he was also a musician and a professional photographer. In fact, many of the photos that you will see in this office were taken by Scott, or he facilitated getting them printed into poster format, and that was a project that Scott undertook several years ago. So he's going to be greatly missed. And he also was a volunteer at the SPCA, which I think he was heading to when he had his crash. So at the behest of his wife, we will be making a contribution to the SPCA in his name. So really sad news. And it's just really tragic and unfortunate to have to report that. Moving on to engineering compliance, on April 2nd, EPA issued the Federal Register approval of Rule 218, Title V operating permits. You've heard about that. Those are major sources. This rule was approved by the Board of Directors on August 21st, 2024. So it's taken a while for EPA to get around to approving it. The Compliance Division is participating in a statewide feasibility study evaluating the use of Alt-152A virtual reality technology for visible emissions certification. So this is our staff, the inspectors primarily, are trained to observe smoke, and they have to be really accurate at it. And there's quantities of smoke that are produced that our inspectors are tested on, and that's called smoke school. But there has been a shift to a non-emissions model of this type of training, which involves the headset and VR goggles. So there's no exposure to toxic chemicals. They'd either have to burn something that produced black smoke or toluene, which produced white smoke. So this is really great to see. And we are really glad that we're moving into the new century on this. On April 10th, we attended a pre-filing meeting for the proposed Seahawk battery energy storage project up in Santa Cruz. The proposed project would be located near the PG&E Green Valley substation in an unincorporated area of Santa Cruz County, north of the city of Watsonville. The applicant will apply to the California Energy Commission through the opt-in certification program. And this program was established by AB 205 to allow CEC to oversee permitting clean and renewable energy facilities. The CEC permit is instead of any permit that the local land use authority would normally acquire, and most but not all state permits. So they're going to be doing all the lifting out there. During the pre-filing meeting, we were able to ask questions about air quality analysis. And once the proposed project is submitted, the CEC will prepare a CEQA document, which will allow for further comment by this agency on the project. And our standing item, we received 3 odor complaints from the city of Marina, from city of Marina residents since the February board meeting. Of course, we were not able to identify any specific sources. No surprise there. Planning and air monitoring, landscape equipment exchange program, or LEAP, provides residents and commercial operations with incentives to replace old internal combustion landscape equipment with new cordless zero emission equipment. So far, 87% of our $619,000 of project funds have been requested. Our 2025-26 wood stove changeout program, which offers incentives to replace non-EPA certified wood stoves with fireplace inserts and open heart fireplaces with cleaner home devices, launched in September. The program is only open to low-income residents living in disadvantaged communities and low-income areas, as well as low-income applicants outside of those areas. The program continues to be popular with 43 applications received already. So this is an indication that once we rededicate it to low-income communities, they're showing up. Monterey Bay's first hybrid electric whale watching vessel project was sponsored by MBARD through a $2.2 million advanced technology pilot project grant from California Air Resources Board. I've reported this before, but the vessel's hull and deck have been fabricated. It's now being assembled in the boatyard at Moss Landing. The project expected to be completed in spring. We also may be involved in electrification of some of the components at the boatyard, since the folks building the boat have taken over control of the boatyard and they're interested in low-income equipment or low-emission equipment at that facility. And then our Spare the Air program was launched in the beginning of December, and so we use this program to advise residents in a voluntary manner to switch away from using wood heating during air stagnation events or, when we have really bad weather that does not allow for the dispersion of pollutants. Our zero emission utility terrain vehicles program, ZEUS, is launched in February. The utility terrain vehicles are small golf cart size vehicles with a maximum engine size of 1.0 liter. These vehicles are often used in ag, landscaping, and campus maintenance. Agricultural businesses, nonprofit organizations, and public agencies in Monterey, Santa Cruz, and San Benito counties can apply for grant funding to replace gasoline or diesel-powered UTVs with similar zero-emission equipment. Applicants may be awarded up to 75% of the replacement cost, up to a maximum of $13,500 per project. Program funding is provided by a grant from the California Resources Board. So far, we've had 6 applications that we've processed. That concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Richard. Any questions? Not seeing any. How about Director LaBarre? Sorry, I can't see that phone. Is he? No hands?
He's not.
Okay.
Online.
Okay. With that, thank you, Richard. We will at this time move to item 21. Oh, so sorry. Public comment is open.
No hands raised online. We did not receive anything, and no hands raised in the boardroom.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for keeping me honest. With that, I'll go ahead and close public comment and now move on to item 21. The board, this is a closed session item, and the board will meet in the closed session pursuant to Government Code 54950 relating to the following: Government Code 54957-6 to provide direction to negotiators. Designated representatives is Richard Stedman and Rosa Rosales, Embard Admin Service Manager, and Lynn Kieflin, Embard Administrative and Fiscal Specialist. And this is also employee organization is SEIU Local 521. And with that, I will open this up for public comment. Public comment is open.
No hands raised online.
Okay. Well, that.
Chair, yes. Before we go into closed session, I'm wondering, I think outside counsel's here. There she is. Hi. I'm curious if on the readout, if we could just state there won't be a readout now, and then we could adjourn from closed session. That might be easier. Okay. Then we can officially say there's nothing to read out today before we move into closed session.
So with that, I'll adjourn. Closed session is closed, and we will recess into closed session and excuse everyone, and we will report out when we come back.